The show is called Live and Local. It's your local performance connection. And today, I will be talking with Michael Luxner, who conducts the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. He's also professor of conducting and many other things at Millikan University. And they're giving their Classical Masters Concert with music by Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven this Saturday evening at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur. And later on the program, we'll be hearing live in our studio the Illinois Brass Quintet, faculty members from the University of Illinois School of Music. They're giving their annual Halloween Spooktacular Concert this Sunday afternoon at the Krannert Center in Urbana. It's Live and Local. You just heard the overture to an opera by Joseph Haydn, which chances are you haven't heard of, unless you've listened to WYLL, in which case you may have heard my colleague Vic DiGeronimo play it every once in a while. But it is called La Fedeltà Premiata, and it was performed here by the Austro-Hungarian Haydn Orchestra, under the direction of Adam Fischer, and it's going to be played as the opening work on the concert this Saturday by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Michael Luxner. And that's going to be at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center on the Millikan campus in Decatur. And Professor Luxner is on the phone with me right now. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
So I had heard this piece before, but really I was introduced to it by my colleague here, Vic, and eventually looked it up for a concert of my own. And how did you run across this piece?
The fact that Haydn wrote operas is just one of those things that one doesn't hear every day unless one listens to a wonderful station like WILL. I mean, Haydn, of course, we always associate, we call him the father of the symphony and the father of the string quartet. But actually, of his total output over his entire life, about half of it is vocal music and does include, several dozen operas, all of which were written for the Esterházy estate, of course, where he spent his 30 years as the resident composer and could write pretty much however he wanted. And this was one of those operas. I ran across it in a publication that brought out 8 excerpts of theater music, overtures and dances from operas by 18th century composers, well arranged and cleaned up by Clark McAllister from Masters Music. And when you're looking for something to fit a program and you've got the right style, this is actually the second one of these that I've done. So it's an excellent curtain raiser, just a bright, lively piece that, as we just heard, the kind of almost cliche Haydn, the rollicking Papa Haydn, the Haydn with the wink in the eye and the charming sequences and modulations and that nice little bright hunting horn call in the middle. And by the way, I'm doing the quiet ending.
Is there another one? I only know the quiet ending.
Oh, okay. Well, in the new version, that the new publication, they did compose a sort of a concert ending. But, of course, it was originally written to flow directly into the first scene of the opera. By the way, the opera was the one that was written for the new opera house at Esterházy after the one that had been there burned down, and they spent 2 years building another one to very high specifications. It was probably one of the best houses in Europe at the time, and not even in a major city. This was the opera written to inaugurate the new house.
I subsequently learned, after conducting it myself, that He used the same piece as the final movement for one of his symphonies.
Oh, I had no idea.
And I'm now forgetting which one it is, but it might even be, it's one of those with, it has hunting horns in it. I don't think it's the horn call, but I'm blanking on which symphony it is.
No, the horn call has four horns in it, I think. Yeah, that's different.
And this one's just two, right?
Well, all you have to do is listen to, 30 or 40 Haydn symphonies until you recognize them.
But he really just picked up the overture, and it's used intact as the final movement.
Oh, why not?
One of the ones in the 70s, 70-something, I don't remember.
It's a delightful and perfectly workable sonata form, and good finale, why not?
Yeah, well, and a good starter, obviously, as you guys decided. Your second piece, I mean, you're doing kind of, in a way, the standard, the old standard orchestra concert formula, where you have an overture, a concerto, and a symphony.
I know, and Haydn, Mozart, Beethoven. I mean, it's the kind of thing that is so cliche that we haven't actually done it in about 35 years because it's such a formula. But it, in a way, it is kind of a novelty. The rest of the program just came together. We built around the Sinfonia Concertante. It was time for a Beethoven symphony, and I thought the Eighth would be great for our audience and for our students and for our orchestra, and I absolutely love it. And I thought, well, I need a little overture to have the audience settle in. Why not do Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven?
And the Mozart, the Sinfonia Concertante for violin and viola, and you're using your own principal players as the soloists.
Yeah.
Want to talk about them a little bit?
Often our season includes, as well as nationally acclaimed soloists booked through the agencies, our own principal players who step forward, and they really do step forward. But they, whenever one of our principal players has a solo role, he or she usually also plays in the orchestra, afterward. And in fact, Georgia and Sharon are returning to their accustomed places for the Beethoven Symphony. And the audience really likes that because the audience does follow the personnel. They pay attention to who the players are, and when a principal chair changes, they watch the new player, and they get to know them and like to see them step forward. And this was one of those vehicles that seemed perfect. Of course, the concertmaster of an orchestra often has solo opportunities nearly every season. Georgia has last played, I think it was The Lark Ascending a few years ago, and Sharon Chung is a new principal and is just doing a marvelous job and really has become a favorite with the audience just in the year or two she's been playing. It's, of course, an utterly beautiful and sublime work, which every time I program it, I just feel lucky to be in the presence of. So it was something they both wanted to do, and it just seemed like a natural fit. And they're doing it, just a beautiful job on it, by the way.
Well, and Georgia, you mentioned, is of course, Georgia Hornbacker, who is both of them are on faculty at Millikan, of course.
Right.
All your principals are.
Yes, and that's the working model of the orchestra, and of course it makes them for a marvelously synergistic teaching process. The students in the orchestra are not only learning how to play orchestra in the studio, learning the excerpts, as it were, but sitting there right next to or behind their teachers in a professionally structured orchestra, getting an orchestra together just the way a freelance professional group would.
And then you also have, you have freelance professionals who come in as well and join the orchestra.
As well, because in the string sections is where you'll find those, because there's only one teacher of each string instrument. There's only one teacher of each instrument, period. And in the winds and brass, that's fine because there are only one or two other players. And so the students are never far from the teachers. But if you have a full violin, viola, cello, bass section, you need many more, and so we have a freelance player on the outside of each stand and a student on the inside.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the Sinfonia Concertante of Mozart, since you mentioned Sublime. Here's a little bit of the second movement. You can hear the complete work played on Saturday evening at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, conducted by my guest on this portion of our show, Michael Luxner. And it'll be performed by Georgia Hornbacker on the violin and violist Sharon Chung. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. We heard some of the middle movement of the Sinfonia Concertante of Mozart for violin and viola and orchestra, and you can hear it played on Saturday by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra with their principal violin and viola, Georgia Hornbacker and Sharon Chung, respectively, and conducted by Michael Luxner, who's my guest on Live and Local right now. Well, Michael, let's just say something briefly about this the last piece on your program, which, as you alluded earlier, is not a piece that gets programmed all that often. And I suggested that the composer, who is Beethoven, actually called it, at the point that he had written it, his own favorite of his own symphonies up to that point.
And, you know, I keep coming back to that, too. You know, when someone asks you one of these silly questions like, what's your favorite Beethoven symphony? You know, you're not supposed to say. It's like asking a mother which of her children mm-hmm. is her favorite. But you're supposed to say whichever one I'm conducting at the moment, and that's true. But I'll tell you, at least every time I conduct this, I keep coming back to thinking, this is just such an amazing piece. I do think it suffers a little bit from that even-numbered symphony syndrome. I think it was Schumann who first sort of poo-pooed the Fourth Symphony by saying it was a slim Greek maiden between two Norse gods or something like that. But it is, you know, there's nothing regressive about it. There's simply nothing lightweight about it. It's just full of invention. It's full of total self-confidence in the way it handles all its materials. It's a fabulous experience to listen to. It's the height of his powers, and I just love doing it, and orchestras love to play it, and audiences love to hear it, and if it isn't my favorite, I don't know why it isn't. Let me put it that way.
Well, I think it's just fabulous, and if I ever it's an easy way to feel emotionally picked up if you're down at all.
Mm-hmm.
I can just sort of conjure up the beginning of this symphony, mm-hmm. and it just sort of changes everything. And so I think we'll go out with the opening of Beethoven's Eighth Symphony. Happens to be a favorite recording of mine, which is with the Tonhalle Orchestra of Zurich, led by David Zinman. And you can hear the entire work played on this concert called Classical Masters by the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. Michael Luxner, music director and conductor, and my guest on Live and Local, and featuring Georgia Hornbacker and Sharon Chung in Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante, and opening with a short and lively overture by Haydn. So you have Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven on this program at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in Decatur, on the Millikan University campus, Saturday evening at 7:30. And this concert will again be heard on our Prairie Performances program with Roger Cooper later on in November. So if you miss it this time around, which of course we're encouraging that you don't, then you have another chance at it, just in case. Michael, thanks as always for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. was the beginning of the first movement of the Eighth Symphony of Beethoven in a performance by the Tonhalle Orchestra of Zurich, conducted by David Zinman. And the Eighth Symphony will be heard, of course, in its entirety by the Melik and Decatur Symphony Orchestra Saturday night at 7:30 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our program's made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. My next guests here on Live and Local are most of them making a return appearance here, and they're certainly making a return appearance to the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon for their 7th annual Illinois Brass Quintet Halloween Spooktacular. It starts at 3 o'clock in the Great Hall. They're joined by a number of guests, as they are annually as well. And all the members are faculty at the School of Music at the University of Illinois School of Music. And the reason I say they're mostly making a return appearance here is we have at least one person who has never been in the studio before. And I can't remember if another guy has or not. So the new guy is Charles Duvall. He's a new professor of trumpet at the U of I. The old guys, for sure, so to speak, sorry guys, are Ronald Rahm on trumpet and Mark Moore on tuba and Elliot Chesnoff on trombone and Bernhard Scully is the horn player. And I can't remember, have you played
been on your
with
show
these
before.
Guys?
I've
I know you've been on the show.
But I've never been in the studio.
You've never been in the studio playing with the IBQ on this show. So there you go. So you're partly new. But we've talked to Bernhard before on the show. Well, anyway, gentlemen, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
The 7th annual Halloween Spooktacular. You always have some scary things and some things that are, well, they're just really good brass quintet music. Elliot, what's the mix this time around?
A little bit of both, again. We're doing Danse Macabre by Saint-Saëns for part of the spooky side, and we're doing some jazzier fun tunes for the fun side. We've got the Yankee Ridge Dancers back with us again, and they're going to be dancing to Joseph Horowitz's Music Hall Suite, which is
A fun piece.
Yeah, it's a bunch of little vignettes of different situations that you would come across in a music hall in the performance arena, and it's always a blast to perform with them because they just do a beautiful job, and they're just young and energetic, and it's a lot of fun.
And that's Yankee Ridge School in Urbana, or
right.
Technically outside Urbana. And Betty Allen, is she still the director of that group?
She certainly is.
Yeah, have they been with you for all 7 years?
All 7 years?
Spooktacular, yeah. Oh, you were kind enough to ask me to host one of them, and I had great fun swooping around it in a vampire costume, but also had great fun watching them perform. That's grade school. What is that? Fifth grade?
I think it's like fifth and sixth graders mostly.
And I remember thinking, boy, they seem like they're a whole lot older than that. They well, I mean, because they dance with a lot of maturity.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Betty's a wonderful choreographer, and she just does great things with these young women. They're just terrific. Just really, really terrific.
Well, let's before we talk about some of your other guests, let's have whatever your first offering is today. What are we going to sample?
We're going to play Fogo de Milata, which is a piece by Enrique Crespo. Enrique Crespo is a trombone player from Uruguay, but was one of the founding members of the German brass. And Elliot Chesnoff arranged this piece. It was originally for trombone solo, and he's arranged it for our quintet. And we really love it.
It was originally for trombone solo with nothing else, or was there an accompaniment?
Brass ensemble, and then reduced to trombone solo with piano. And I took it and re-scored it for brass quintet.
You always do a good job. It's the Illinois Brass Quintet here on Live and Local. Thank you. Brass Quintet here on Live and Local, and Mark Moore, why don't you tell us once more what that piece was, because I forgot.
That was a piece by Enrique Crespo called Fogo di Mulata.
What does that mean?
It's a song for...
Test? This is a test.
It's a mulata woman.
And so. Arrangement by Elliot Jasanoff, who's the trombonist with the quintet, and everybody here is on faculty at the University of Illinois School of Music. I want to give a chance for the newest faculty member because, I mean, I didn't even know that Charlie Duvall was on faculty here until I got the notice about you guys agreed to come on the show. So you're new this year?
I am new this year.
To the faculty. And you've been traveling around, so to speak, with the various orchestras.
I've been around, that's true.
Why don't you give us your short resume, and then I want to ask you about... particularly interesting aspect, at least to me.
Okay.
One of the more recent developments. You probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, the short and dirty. It's not going to be very short. After school, my first job was in the Seattle Symphony, and I went there to the Boston Symphony, and then to the where I was principal in the Boston Pops and associate in the Boston Symphony. Then I went to the Cincinnati Symphony, and then eventually became principal trumpet of the Montreal Symphony. And from there, I moved to the University of Michigan, where I was the trumpet professor in Michigan, where I kind of really found a little bit more happiness and stability, I think, in my life. Unfortunately, my wife was a little unfulfilled in Ann Arbor. She didn't have work, and so she went out and won a job in the Pittsburgh Symphony. And so we ended up doing a career swap, and I resigned my position in Ann Arbor, moved to Pittsburgh when we had our second kid, and I was sort of a Mr. Mom for a little while. And then I think what you're probably talking about is a few years ago, I decided to go just out of sort of more than curiosity, a kind of a lifelong interest. I went back to school and got a law degree. Then now that my kids are kind of getting a little bit more mature, we kind of decided it was time for me to get back and working. And what I most loved was teaching, and this job thankfully came open, and I applied, and here I am.
So what's your wife doing now?
Well, that's the awkward part. Here I am, but she's back in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Symphony, and we're still kind of working out the long term what's going to happen with that. But I've been going back and forth, and trying to spend as much time with my family, obviously, as I can, but also as much time with my students here as I can.
So, you know, the law thing, people always, throw doctors and lawyers around as the most respected people, but everybody knows that they're probably among the least respected people, because always people say lawyers,
It's interesting. One of the things that you end up, especially after you finish with law school, one of the things you end up spending most of my time doing. I'm not actually practicing as an attorney. I decided not to do that. I passed three different bar exams, but I really prefer to be doing this. So I'm not practicing as an attorney. And I am not licensed in the state of Illinois, so nobody here should ask me any questions, please. Nor do I have malpractice insurance anywhere, so don't ask me any questions. I can give you no answers. But as far as continuing legal education credits, which all lawyers have to do, ethics is one of the things we do the most, which I think kind of surprises people. But I actually find, for the most part, the areas that I've been involved with in school and the lawyers I know are actually some of the most ethical people I know.
Probably the high-profile ones that, you know.
Exactly. I mean, there's always bad apples, and when a lawyer's bad and it's a big deal, then everybody's going to hear about it.
Yeah, that's the way it goes everywhere. Well, we're glad to have you back in the music world.
I'm glad to be here. Yeah. I never really left.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it. No, it really sounds like it. I mean, you guys, between you, you've been playing in some really great places. people know, certainly, who've heard anything about Ronnie Ron before, you know, you're still playing with the Canadian Brass, right? At least sometimes?
Well, very, very seldom these days. They have four young, very young players that are taking their place in the, they have two young trumpet players and a hornist and also a young trombonist. So the last remaining original member of the group is Chuck Dallenbach. So
the tuba player.
The tuba player, right.
Yeah, so they can only stand so much gray hair anymore?
I think so, yeah. That's all. They're just, you know, more interested in the other kind of hair.
I say better gray hair than no hair.
Well, some of us have a mix of both of those things.
Some of us do.
Gray and nothing. All in one head.
Right.
You've got some other guests on this concert. Just a reminder, the IBQ is playing at their Halloween Spooktacular Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, and you mentioned the Yankee Ridge Dance Group. You're going to be working with some of your students, who are the Graduate Brass Quintet.
Yes, the U of I Graduate Brass Quintet is going to join us on two pieces for a larger brass ensemble, and then we're going to feature them by themselves on the Bach Toccata and Fugue. They're looking forward to that. They get a chance to play it in the Great Hall.
Yeah, well, anytime you get to play in the Great Hall, that's a lot of fun. Even if you're used to it, I would think, you know, if you get to do it with some regularity, it's still a great experience. What makes it so?
The Great Hall?
Yeah.
It's really one of the best.
What's so great about it?
It's one of the best performing halls in the world, actually, acoustically speaking. It's a little smaller than some of the major concert halls in the United States, but it's more similar to some of the European concert halls that many of us probably have played in. It just is the shoebox shape. So it has the basic, you know, resonance, very natural resonance. And I know this because I did a recital there last year, and I had a great time playing it, but I never had heard a recording of myself in the hall. And I had just done I've been working on a CD project, and I've been listening to the takes of that. All of a sudden, I put on my recital from the Krannert Center, and I kind of forgot what I was listening to. And it just was a basic mic. They just put a basic mic and kind of close to my bell, probably their standard setup. And I was just kind of, you know, cleaning my office or something. I was like, what am I listening to? Some of the same pieces. And then I was like, heard a little imperfection. I was like, oh, it's the recital. But it sounded, it was really amazing to me. The hall itself can generate such a complete sound for the instruments. And so I think for the students, I mean, that's pretty amazing to have that kind of a experience to play in such a concert hall. Most of the orchestras that come by here and people that are guest artists that come through the university that play there say it's one of the highlights. I mean, the St. Louis Symphony just came by, and they're just like, we just love playing here. You know, I wish we could play here more. So it's pretty remarkable.
So part of it is the audience's experience, but part of it is the performer's experience.
Both.
From the stage.
I really think both. Yeah.
That's what makes it so great. It's both. I mean, I went to my first concert there this fall when I heard the orchestra do Petrushka, the student orchestra do Petrushka, and I just thought, wow, how fortunate for our students to be able to play in such a great hall, because most universities either don't have a large hall and so the students don't really get that experience, or, you know, not to diss my former employer, I had a great time, it's a great school, but the Hill Auditorium at the University of Michigan is so big and so cavernous that for its size it is a good hall. But it's not nearly the same kind of sonic experience for either the audience or the students that playing at Krannert is. It's just so wonderful in Krannert.
That's true.
I know you've got at least one other guest, but let's hear some of what you else you're going to do on the program. What is our next offering?
We have Luther Henderson arrangement of St. Louis Blues. And Luther Henderson was a classically trained pianist, a graduate of the Juilliard School, and he ended up being a world-class arranger. He started out arranging in the Navy Band in World War II, and in those days, because of his color, he was in the back room doing arrangements. And when he got out of the Navy, he just started to do Broadway shows and arrangements for Lena Horne he was Duke Ellington's friend. So all of the orchestral pieces that Duke Ellington's orchestra did with Major Symphony Orchestra, all of those were written by Luther Henderson, orchestrated by Luther. And along the way, he was doing Ain't Misbehavin' on Broadway. And my old group, Canadian Brass, was performing, and we had a contract with a record company that was doing the recording for the cast recording of Ain't Misbehavin'. And Luther, we met through that connection, and Luther has written about 150 pieces for brass ensemble of a variety of sizes. And this is really one of the most lovely and interesting colors and textures of Luther's writing. So this is St. Louis Blues, Luther Henderson. It's got a piccolo trumpet playing the part of the clarinet. He called it jazzicalization of the style.
I'm forgetting. Is St. Louis Blues, is that a W.C. Handy tune? Originally?
It is.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh. We're hoping that it isn't too topical for this
week.
Pending
Are you
what
sure
happens.
You want to play it?
Yeah, pending what happens in the World Series, we're hoping there's not a lot of St. Louis Blues going on. So
yeah.
That's true.
Okay.
It's
all right.
A happy blues.
Right. Listen carefully, ladies and gentlemen. You don't want no jinxes happening right here. Halloween or not.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis Blues by W.C. Handy is arranged by Luther Henderson and played here by the Illinois Brass Quintet. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, they are live in our studio, and you can hear them live at the Kranert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock for their 7th annual Halloween Spooktacular program, along with the Yankee Ridge Dance Group, the U of I Graduate Brass Quintet. And I see Don Schleicher here. He's listed as, he's the U of I orchestra conductor. I assume he's going to conduct your combined forces?
Yes.
And then Chet Always, who's a choral conductor. What's he doing there?
He's the host. He's going to do the introductions.
Oh. And, so he gets to do the fun costume this year.
Yes.
And you probably don't know what it's going to be until he shows up.
You always surprise us. Yeah,
that's part of the fun. And you guys do sort of silly get-ups, as I recall, or scary, depending upon what your mood may be.
Yeah, we have a few silly get-ups ready.
Yeah, I'm not gonna ask you to reveal that.
Well, I'm already wearing one, so.
Well, I was not gonna say something about that.
Well, that's okay. It's radio, because so, okay. They just have to imagine.
That's right. It really is silly, though. You know, it's not something we want to talk about in the
radio. I know, it's true.
before I ask this next question, I do need to tell people that our program today is made possible with support from Eastern Rug Gallery, offering over 1,000 contemporary and traditional guaranteed hand-knotted rugs made of pure wool or silk pile from contemporary to traditional. Eastern Rug Gallery also offers a cleaning and repair service. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. Listening to Charlie Duvall sort of give resume a little earlier and just looking over everybody else's resume, and I'd forgotten actually, Bernhard Scully, that you had been also in the Canadian Brass along with Ronnie Rahm before you joined the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and of course Elliot and Mark Mickey have been all over the place, and I'm always curious in the course of your changing careers, what makes you leave a gig that so many other people would presumably kill for? For example, say the Boston Symphony or Canadian Brass. Just
want
curious.
My honest answer?
I do.
Well, I wasn't really wanting to leave it. It was really fun. I thought it was pretty much dream come true. I was like, why would I? But it was on the road. I mean, one of the aspects of that particular job, as my colleague can definitely attest, is you're gone all the time. We had just decided to have our baby, our first baby, and so we did.
And you, Ron, had a baby?
Yeah,
we don't talk about it a whole lot, but we're pretty close. We came close when we were on the road that time. So
you're both married to somebody else. I didn't think we were going to get into this today.
So anyways,
two different people.
It just sort of, it was almost like the universe directed me in a different way, because we just had Ellie, and then it was like right then, the chamber orchestra basically had this opening, and they asked me to apply for it, basically. It's like, we haven't filled the position. Would you? And I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to leave for anything, leave this awesome job for anything, why not this other cool job that I'd be able to be, you know, more stable and at home? So that was one reason I left, you know, kind of the dream Canadian brass gig. Everybody asked me that, like, why would you leave that job? And I was like, well, I didn't really want to, but... Yeah, it was kind of a combination of being responsible and also just feeling a bit of pressure myself. I was like, I didn't want to be gone all the time for my daughter. I'd heard stories about that. So
now here you are at the University of Illinois, and you're still having to travel to St. Paul every once in a while.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, I probably do more traveling now. I do comparable amount of traveling as probably some of these you all do, like playing in a group, because we do guest artist type things all the time. But the difference is here, probably I have the most control of my schedule of any of the places I've ever worked. Mm. In the orchestra, one of the issues is you know, others can attest, it's grueling. It's a grueling schedule. And we would give, you know, 5 concerts a week. You know, so I was, even though I was home, it wasn't like I was a, you know, free man by any means, you know, for my family. So here, actually, although I'm very busy, can I have more control? It's kind of a, I think of this as the dream job, actually.
And Charlie, you said, you know, leaving the, I forget, was the Montreal,
yeah,
was
I actually had a, yeah, I had a similar experience, slightly different, but it kind of amounted to the same thing. When I was in Montreal, most people in major orchestras also teach, and I was teaching at McGill as an adjunct faculty member, and it was right then that I had gotten married, and my wife pointed out, it's so funny to look back on it, that when I would come home from work from the orchestra, she never knew which person was going to come home, Jekyll or Hyde, you know, depending on if I had a good day or if my colleagues had a good day or whether it was a fun concert to play or a hard concert to play. It was a mixed bag emotionally for me playing a principal in a big orchestra like that. A lot of times it was really fun. A lot of times it was really boring. And a lot of times it's really hard work. And sometimes it's really terrifying. But she pointed out that every single time I would come home from a day of teaching at McGill, no matter how long my day was, I was always in a good mood.
Wow.
And, you know, wisdom sometimes comes from the mouths of wives. And,
really?
We discussed it and took that to heart. And this job at Michigan came open, and it seemed like really the right thing to do at the time. And in retrospect, that's why I'm so open about mentioning my feeling about leaving Montreal. It was the right thing, because it really was, as Bernie mentioned, it turned out to me that this kind of a setting, for many of the same reasons as Bernie, is really, in my opinion, my dream job. The control of schedule, the relative autonomy, it's really, and for me, I really feel a connection with these, I call them kids, these students that we get at such a great time in their lives. And I think that's part of why I enjoyed going back to law school so much. I got to relive that sort of experience a little bit while I was in law school. I loved being in law school so much. And it's sort of similarly, I connect, I think, with this time in the lives for these kids who are in college, and what a great time it is for them, and how great it is to just be part of that with these kids.
You know, one other thing I think that's important to remember about orchestral playing in general, specifically orchestral, is the conductor is really the soloist most of the time. I mean, yeah, there are individual instrument solos, but the conductor dictates the interpretation, shapes the piece, makes color decisions, makes balance decisions, which sort of, in a certain way, takes it out of your wheelhouse. I had a good friend who recently retired as a principal trombone in a major orchestra in the United States, and he said, I'm just jealous of you. You get to make your own musical decisions. He said, I'm like an organ stop. The conductor points at me. I have to play it the way he wants me to play it, at the dynamic he wants me to play it, even if, by my experience, that might be a wrong interpretation. I still have to play it that way. So he said, you're really confined in terms of your creative side of your musicianship. Now, there are solos and there are opportunities to get up and play solos, but that's one of the reasons that I decided to just go ahead and pursue this side myself, was the orchestral playing I'd done was very rewarding, but
to a point.
There's a limitation to it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, speaking as a conductor who used to be a brass player, well, for one thing, I can't imagine, aside from being an air traffic controller, I can't imagine anything more stressful than being a principal brass player in any symphony orchestra. So I just can't even think about it. But as a conductor, on the other side of things, I would say that I get really jealous of all the players because I'm thinking, you know, I'm up here waving my hands, and ultimately, I'm not making a sound. And, you know, it's, I'd rather be making sound a lot of the time, and I often regret that I'm not playing horn anymore for maybe the same reason. You know, y'all might think that we've got this power thing going up here, but we're the weakest person in the orchestra, in a way. And so it's fun to hear you guys play and watch you guys play and have
direct
such a great time.
Conductors out there, direct your comments to Kevin Kelly.
That's right. That's right. I'm happy to receive them and confirm or refute as I please. Well, we've got, I imagine we've got it, one more tune at least, and that's what we'll have time for. So consider what it's going to be. Don't have another tune?
No.
Oh, we don't have another tune. No. Oh, that's all. Oh.
I have to sing? Leave them wanting more.
I'm going to have to sing now. Oh, God. Now I'm that's more stressful than principal or horn or air traffic controller. Well, reminder
first,
that
first
it's
music,
the...
Are we discussing?
You want to first move it?
I'm sorry, what do you want to do?
We can do one. Do you have it?
Let me just make sure I get it.
We're going to shuffle around.
We're going to shuffle around. Well, let me say some of the things I have to say here beforehand. We have a contingency. If you don't have something else, that's fine. We do have support for our show today from the Corkscrew, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday, Laura Keon of Campbell Fine Wines will be representing Montinor Estate of Oregon and Pass Parker Wines of California. Then live music from 7 to 9 p.m. by the Brian Holloway Something Trio. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and the Illinois Brass Quintet will give its Halloween Spooktacular Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Great Hall of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. For more information, go to krannertcenter.com.
We have the first movement of the Horowitz Music Hall Suite.
Excellent.
And we're going to perform that with great panache and, and sensitivity.
I have no doubt. Oh, somebody's going to buck the trend here. All right, have
here
fun.
Here we go. Thank you.